Thank you, Mark. I actually wondered if there was a way to project Moe's behind me as I run. Traditions. No hoodies, no button-down sweaters, no sandals, no t-shirts with ads, no short skirts, no shorts of any kind, no jewelry, watches, scarves, gloves, no white pants, no layered clothing, nothing orange, no spaghetti straps, no jeans or backless shoes or platform heels, no high heels, no back exposed, no cleavage, and no camisoles. A handwritten addition. Visitors to the prison must wear traditional undergarments. I wonder, what tradition does the Illinois Department of Corrections follow? The woman sitting next to me says, all that means is no wearing the hell out of your dress. I consider the single word on a closed door, condemned. Soon I will be with the damned. Someone had ordered the plate, and someone had carved the word, and someone had mounted the sign, here. Before or beyond the brutality of it all, I feel something close to the surface of things. How rude, putting it on the visiting room door. After the second pat-down, I wait in a holding room crammed with 25 others. A female guard looks at me. You can't go in like that. What? You have to have sleeves. Sleeves? No sleeveless shirts. That's not on the list. And it's not really sleeveless. It doesn't matter. You have to go. I don't move. A visitor shakes her head in empathy, and the kindness nearly breaks me. Others keep their eyes fixed on the grim door, the next round of humiliation. They want in, and I understand. Are you serious? I can't go in. I drove 2.5 hours to get here. My voice breaks. Another woman says, I have a sweater in my car. She can wear that. The guard is bored with the whole thing. No outerwear. There is a dollar store down the road. If you hurry, you can get back for the next round of visits. I know what that means. We've waited 2 hours already. The next group won't get in till noon or later. Visiting hours end at 1:30. Prison takes time, swallows it whole. I am escorted out of hell. We wait for a guard to unlock the gate that opens to a corridor that leads back to the stairs that end at the waiting room. I ask in the most subordinate voice, why are sleeveless shirts not allowed? You can't reveal anything. I don't have much to reveal. Nothing, not even a glimmer. I can't help it, I go on. Do you really think this shirt is revealing? She stares through bars, gothic, unforgiving keys on her hips. It's not up to me, she says. And I see in her blasted eyes the lockdown days and tight, loony logic of the fiefdom. We don't talk anymore. I return wearing some god-awful polyester men's shirt, the only thing left, and she doesn't make me wait for the next round. She brings me in herself, the two of us silent through the clicking maze. I'll get him for you, she says, still not looking at me. And I watch her approach another guard and hear the name of my friend come out of her mouth. There are those who go on loving through watchtowers and protocols, lost letters and strip searches, always the wrong hands on you, who know the space between is full of threat. Any stranger, any tension, any minute in the weight room or tier might change what could have been a good visit. All you ask, a good visit, enough to hold the sky in place one more day, so you can take in her face, his smile, until the trapdoor cracks and you are hit by careening sun home to the midnight strain toward paper, dear substitute for getting inside, over the wall, past the guns, into those hands. As I was working on that, I got on an online national chat for folks who have loved ones in prison and asked women to share with me their experiences about the regulations of clothes. And I got all of these wonderful, you know, anecdotes from people. So just a few of those. One had had three suspicious buttons in the back of a turtleneck that constituted a 1-inch violation of skin. Another had worn the same pink shirt for months, she said, until one Saturday, same guard, same shirt, but suddenly it was orange, which in most prisons you can't wear because some of the inmates have to wear orange. In other places, it's denim. Anyway, so she had to go out like I did and buy a new shirt. Another wore something that she admitted, and these are her words, pushed the outside of the envelope, and was offered by a female guard a safety pin to take care of the matter. So there, one quick maneuver, and in she went with a safety pin. and then another wrote, by the time I'm dressed, I look like I'm going to the library, not the dance floor, which is a word for the visitation space. So it was really wonderful because they ended up writing their own poems, which I am too shy to read to you. They would make me blush. But then it sort of became this advice column about particularly what to do about underwire bras, which can set up off the metal detectors. So just a couple voices. One said, I've been to Walmart, Target, Victoria's Secret, and Macy's to find a bra without metal hooks and no luck. To save you the trouble of having to take off your bra and mess up your hair after you take so long to look your best, buy a sports bra. Voice number two, another solution, take one of your older bras and cut off the hooks and metal adjusters, sew it up to fit, works good for gals that need a little more support than sports bras give. And number three, you can go to a craft store and replace the metal hooks with plastic ones. I had a few tailored because I can't sew to save my life. I just love this idea of this woman going to a craft store to get her metal hooks taken out. So, I sometimes feel like I drag prison, right, into these otherwise upbeat discussions, but in truth, it's always there. So I tried to figure out who this Valentine is, and there are several possibilities. But one of them has to do with a Roman priest who apparently was marrying Christians in defiance of the emperor's order. He was imprisoned and beheaded, but according to one story, before he was killed, he worked a miracle and fell in love. My funny Valentine. Why do birds, did you, Valentine, defy Claudius, fall out of the sky, marry warriors too smitten for empire, and fall for the guard's sweet daughter? I hear you sent a note. The beatified are one miracle shy of saint. There is no word for you. The parliament bickers over sesame seeds, pigeons bob, the subway screams. These birds are all I have of belonging. Your commemoration on infallible whim removed. School children remember. I see them, serious over S, trick A, startled K, wintertime longing for a certain thing. Lullaby. Mad trumpets finger this bare cold, wind waterfalls over a small blue house where dreams dawdle and shutters fold. Blood dazzles a cheek, pools an altar boy's knees. Bored, he rings the clatter of a miracle, licks his salt palm, and blessings mightily congeal. We could have mornings, so torn earth with spider webs, measure time in pretty rows, death soft between our toes, or lean in a tumult of forgetting, play roulette with birth. Touch me now and we'll sing lullabies to bruises, crows sleek blackness regnant down our throats, careening bodies blush and trail green wings, love, startling eyelashes, clavicle. Who chooses to be a dream, rocked without word, to burn with a fire other than need? And I want to read just one lyric by Angelina Well Grimke, who's an early 20th century American poet who wrote, and a playwright, who wrote these lovely veiled and not so veiled love poems to women. To Mona Lisa. I should like to creep through the long brown grasses that are your lashes. I should like to poise on the very brink of the leaf brown pools that are your shadowed eyes. I should like to cleave without sound their glimmering waters, their unrippled waters. I should like to sink down and down and deeply drown. And one by June Jordan. Sweet Honey and the Rock did a recording of this, so if you know that, you have to try and not think about it, because I can't do it anything like that. Allah, that's all right, but somebody come and carry me into a 7-day kiss. I can't use no historic, no national, no family bliss. I need an absolutely one-to-one, a 7-day kiss. I can read the daily papers, I can even make a speech, but the news is stuff that tapers down to salt poured in the breach. I've been scheming about my people. I've been scheming about sex. I've been dreaming about Africa and nightmaring Oedipus the Rex. But what I need is quite specific, terrifying, rough stuff, and terrific. I need an absolutely one-to-one, a 7-day kiss. I can't use no more historic, no national, no bona fide family bliss. Somebody come and carry me into a 7-day kiss. And I'll just end with a sort of spontaneous ditty composed by that person that I live with, not my dog, but the by Tony. I said to him, you know, I'm going to do this reading. About a week ago, I said, what should I say? What do I do, right? Because I'm really not a creative writer. I do the academic thing most of the time. So Tony had a guitar in his hand, and I just wrote down what he said. So you have to imagine strumming and some picking with this. Why is it the only thing I ever do on Valentine's Day is this reading? Why does my man not do anything for me on Valentine's Day or any other day? What is the good of a man? Strum. What is love? Is love that which provokes anger and unwashed dishes? Does love empty the dishwasher, remember to buy toilet paper? Do we even like love? I ask you, is love possible beyond our pets? And if it is it wise? Do animals celebrate Valentine's Day? If they did, would they hold readings? And then just a couple days after that, Reuters published a story, you might have heard about this, about some study. A fifth of the adults in the world would prefer to be with their pet than their partner on Valentine's Day. And this survey was of some 24,000 people in 23 countries, and 21% of adults would rather spend February 14th with their pet than their partner. Men and women were evenly split over the question. At our house, there was, you know, it's really clear. We all want to be with Modes. So to our animals, human and otherwise, thank you so much. Thank you, Mark.